You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, and very special guest, as always, this week, episode 140, we'll be talking to Anthony De La Rose. He's an author based in Tampa, Florida, and shortly we'll have him on the line from there talking about his novel, Cathedral of Salt. Why is this anything to do with Colombia? Well, those of you who know Colombia, or those of you who are coming to Colombia, will know that Cathedral of Salt is a reference to that famous underground cathedral in the salt mine in Zipaquirá. Zipaquirá, just on the outskirts. Well, it's a different municipality. It's in Cundinamarca, but it's that cathedral out there in the outskirts of Bogota. So it takes about an hour to get there from Bogota, and well worthwhile. One of the top or most visited sites in Colombia by tourists. And so we'll be talking to him. It's a mix of Tom Clancy and Dan Brown. This is what Amazon says. I've read it, but I'm just reading the Amazon review here. A mix of Tom Clancy and Dan Brown, Anthony La Rose brings you an action thriller in one of the world's most exotic locales, Colombia's Cathedral of Salt. What people are saying, impressive jumps right into the action, interesting main character and forensics, a potential to be a series. So Tony is a criminologist, and so therefore this comes into the story. You can tell it's been written by an expert in his field. So he's investigating a little bit into the Colombian culture. He's telling us a bit more through this work of fiction. So very exciting indeed to have Anthony De La Rose on this show, because, you know, we need to mix things up here, don't we? We need to mix things up and have different guests on the show. And so once I heard about this book and found out about Tony himself, we've had a sort of back and forth of emails, and now, yes, we'll be doing the interview here over the phone, but I'm sure it'll be fascinating, because, you know, someone of this stature and with this kind of background is certain to have some interesting tales to tell. And of course he can tell us all about Zipaquirá. I've been there a couple of times myself, two or three times. If you're thinking of coming to Colombia, or if you're here and you haven't been, do definitely go and see the Cathedral of Salt, the Salt Cathedral in Zipaquirá, Catedral de Sal. But also, if you are further interested into sort of spelunking or other cave activities, you know, cave-based activities, there's Nemocón, which is just a bit further on. Actually, not too far from Villa de Leyva in reality, but it's a Nemocón, and you can go into different salt mines down there too. So that's well worth mentioning, because we need to push people out there into different destinations into Colombia, not out, way off into the wilds, but into places that can be reached and that can be enjoyed without any risk whatsoever. So that's today's show. Today's show is about Cathedral of Salt, the novel, the fictional novel, written by Anthony La Rose, and we'll be on the line with him very shortly after this break here on Columbia Calling. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back with Anthony La Rose. Thank you again. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as they like to say. This is Columbia Calling, episode 140. Yes, it feels like a red letter number, that 140 episodes, all about Colombia or related to things Colombian. And I'm very pleased to introduce this week's interviewee. He's in Tampa, Florida. His name's Anthony Patrick La Rose. We call him Tony. He's up there in Tampa, as I previously mentioned, and he's the author of this book about, I'm going to let him explain what the book is, but the book is entitled Cathedral of Salt, and we've got him on the show because, of course, this is a Colombian show. So, Tony, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Richard. Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Now, listen, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, we got in touch over Twitter, then we've had, you know, a little bit of a back and forth with emails, and I finally got around to reading the book. But you are an associate professor of criminology at the University of Tampa. I mean, what made you write a book?
Well, the real impetus for the book was, part of it was pulling in my background. Obviously, with 25 years as a criminologist, obviously that's an area of interest. And now the book itself and why Cathedral of Salt and the setting of Columbia and the setting of Zipaquirá was simply a product of my experience. And it started out, my trips to Columbia, my experiences were academic. I traveled down. I actually had a book chapter set. I shouldn't say set. We're talking about it like it's a novel, but an academic book chapter about Colombian policing. And I've had several students also who were from Colombia, and they had some areas of interest in criminology. And so I've worked with them. We've done a CSI paper based around Colombia. And also we did another survey and actually have a paper written. We're translating it. We're going to submit it to an academic journal in Colombia. And that was about police values in Colombia. So I've had this strong background in criminology in general. And then I got this nice mix, this addition of Colombia. And so it was an opportunity to travel, an opportunity to go, in this case, the first trip, a place I hadn't been, and to do this academic work. And of course, as you know, offices close at 5 o'clock and they're not open on weekends. So you got to use that other time wisely. And I was looking at after visiting and going around Bogota, it was a chance to go out, went to Leyva to check out the wine, and also went also to Zipaquirá, because it's the mine is, certainly as they call it, is the number one tourist attraction in Colombia. And so I went to see the mine, and as soon as I got out of the taxi in downtown, if you can call it downtown Zipaquirá, I absolutely just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the architecture. I fell in love with the cobblestone streets. I fell in love with the really rustic wooden tables that sit outside, and all of the little shops and the activity that goes on. And then walked up, went to the mine, took the tour, and just immediately said, boy, this is something. And actually my first thought was, this would be a great place for a Quentin Tarantino movie. So maybe that'll happen someday too. But I just remember walking in and seeing all the imagery and learning about it, learning that it's an actual working mine, learning how it's essentially one giant carved piece that they bring things in. They carved it out of what was there. And all the little areas and all the staircases and the crosses and the memorials, all those things just hit me. And I said, this is just a good place for some type of a thriller. And I went into, got my yellow pad out. I got my pen out. I sat down. I ordered myself a 25-cent beer and started writing. And it just flowed and flowed and flowed. And eventually here we are.
Fantastic. Well, you were really inspired. I mean, you were bitten by this inspiration. And I can see that Zipaquirá is an inspiring place. The mine, the engineering that it must have taken to carve out that cathedral underground into the salt mine, the old Muisca salt mine. And of course, in the book, you discuss in some depth, actually, the sort of the relevance and the background of the Muisca, the original people of this area. I mean, because there is an energy, isn't there? You feel it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that is something that I simply had to be in the novel, and that's one of the things with that book some other things that I've written is I try to go for authenticity, and so I wanted to make sure that when people were reading, they weren't reading some gringo's idea of what this area is like or what the history is, but that they read the actual history, that they read something that is based on reality. And so that whole area and the history of it and the prehistoric, if you will, or pre-Columbian era for that place, just really hit me. And I'm a big fan of history. I love history of all kinds. And I just knew I needed to get that into the novel.
Excellent. And so tell me a little bit about your trips that were not novel related. down here to Colombia. So you were you giving lectures or talks about various sort of elements of criminology to at universities, academic institutions here in Colombia?
I didn't do any lecturing in Colombia. What I did was working on the getting information for the book chapter that I wrote.
Okay.
And so I was able to utilize, the university provides us a small amount of funds every year, and so I was able to utilize that to go down. And then I also, I was dating a gal from Bogota for a while. And so, of course, that was another impetus to get back to Bogota. And every time I went, I had to get out to Zipaquirá. I mean, it was just calling me every time I got there. And so that was the main reason to get out there those number of times.
I see. You got trapped. Well, not trapped. You're certainly in a relationship with a Bogotana. It happens to the best of us.
It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
not a bad thing at all. So very interesting indeed. And you know, Zipaquirá. So you'd sit there in the main plaza and just let the words flow. And the ideas for this agent Grant and the police officer Santos and this mysterious lady Huasa just came forward.
It all just came out, and particularly it started with sitting and just seeing what was going on. And I made a lot of notes as I went, and I tend to not write things in order, and I know that's probably. People would be critical of that, but people's story arc and they outline everything. I just have a very very basic outline normally in my head, but I'd like to just let the words flow, and I can always go back and move them around, or I can always edit. And so sitting in the town, particularly, it could just simply be somebody walking by, and something would strike me, or just. You know, the restaurant, there's where Sam opens up the novel, and he's sitting behind a wall of beer cans because, you know, he's out for breakfast there. And that's a real place. And I remember when I was sitting in there going, my God, this you can't make this place up. You
know,
this, and so it was a matter of writing out what was I seeing in there in terms of the television? What was I seeing in terms of the decor? What's going on outside? You know, people walking by and what I'm seeing, and any other types of events like that were all just woven into it.
I do like the idea. You know, you have Sam, you have the U.S. agent there having beers over breakfast, but this is not something unusual in these rural towns. In fact, in the tiendas del barrio in the main cities as well. I mean, people usually, these are, you know, let's say people who've been out in the fields working already for several hours, but the ability to sit around and drink beer is quite second to none in these towns. I mean, that must have struck you a little bit.
I think I got in touch with my inner Colombian at that point. But it's a little different to see, you know. But that's part of the fun of traveling and seeing the culture. And particularly on the weekdays, it was really very quiet in Zipaquirá. And oftentimes there might only be, not including the shop owners, five or six people in the plaza. But then, of course, Sunday rolls around, Saturday and Sunday, and you get all the folks who do come in from the countryside.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you do see what we're talking about, someone opening a can of beer at, 10 in the morning. And by the way, I'm not judging anybody. I've been there, done that. So, but the clothes that they wear, you can tell the guy who doesn't have a lot, he probably lives on a very small, farm that he has out in the woods, out in the campo, out in the countryside. But he and his wife, dress, in their Sunday bests, and coming into town and visiting, and you can tell everybody knows one another, and people see their friends, and so it was just really a great, great environment.
This is true. Now you came down to Colombia and Zipaquirá six times, but what additional research did you do? I mean, were you taking it all from your criminology background, or what other research did you do to be able to write this book, Cathedral of Salt?
Well, part of it was, I would say, just regular, what we knew, the Google scholarship, to get on and type things in. I was also drew a lot of inspiration from photos. I took, giving away my age here, but I actually have a digital camera on my cell phone, and I took hundreds and hundreds of photos of everything that I saw and everything that looked interesting, and I wanted to get as much detail about everything as I could, and then that would all, at some point, would get fit into what was happening. And then in terms of things, and all the buildings are real, you know, everything that happens and is based on reality. And the probably the most research that I did was on forensics. There's quite a bit of forensics in the novel. And I have a friend of mine, Leslie Nixon is her name, and she's actually a microbiologist, and she's worked at both the state of Michigan, and also in Florida Department of Law Enforcement Crime Lab. So, and she's worked on some of the major cases here in Florida. People would likely have heard of some of them. And so she became a really valuable resource for things. And whenever I had a question and I thought it would be interesting, it's a small town and he's not going to have a giant lab and it's not going to be CSI like on TV. But what if he's there and he's got to think on his feet? And so I gave my friend Leslie a number of scenarios and I said, okay, you know, what would you do? How could you get this done? Assuming you have access to, you know, a local drugstore and a local supermarket. And she just rattled things off and would tell me, and I would ask questions, and I just took copious notes on everything that she said, and then worked those into the novel. I was very fortunate to have access to someone with that background.
I mean, that makes it, you know, very much, it brings it closer, isn't it, when you have this sort of like the mundane items from everyday life, but being used in forensic research. As you say, it's not like the glossy, shiny CSI images that we see on TV. It's, you know, using your wits more than anything. And of course, these towns wouldn't have it. They wouldn't have these. In most Colombian rural towns, will not have access to any of these things. You know, if there's any sort of, let's say, violent crime, they would have to wait for the Colombian version is CTI. They'd have to wait for the CTI to come on out from whichever major city that corresponds to that region. I mean, the delay would be immense. And of course, you play on that. You play on that in the book.
And that was an important part of it is why else, essentially? Because you have to find a reason. Like, you know, why is Sam Grant there, right? Why is he still in that town? And so that became, and of course, I did find a reason. I don't want to give too much away about the book, but there's things happen that make it that he has to stay, or he is asked to stay because they need his help. I also thought that was a good way to juxtapose, him with Santos, you know, the local cop who's assigned to help him, and Santos' indignation of having to essentially babysit this gringo for several days. And forensics always finds it, is always interesting and it can always provide an interesting twist at different points.
Yes, it's true. And you know what? The local police would be resentful in these places. You know, you'd be stepping on their toes. You'd be the know-it-all. You'd be the foreigner. I mean, that's the truth of it. They'd be nice, welcoming on the surface. But as soon as you're getting involved or metiéndose in their work, I mean, it would be a different story altogether. I think it's great. I think it's great that you really did. You sat down. The inspiration flowed. I'm always permanently looking for inspiration. There are days when there's none. And those days when there's too much, and my hat is off to you for getting together and writing this book. It's Cathedral of Salt. It's available on Amazon. It does follow a kind of Tom Clancy line. It's fast moving. It's set over several days. But I'm not going to give much more away about this book because you go online and buy it. You know, support the writing industry. That's what we need. But we're talking to Anthony Patrick LaRose. He's up in Tampa at the moment. We're here in Bogota, as always. This is Colombia Calling, episode 140. And yes, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking further about Tony's writing, Tony's books, criminology, and so on. Of course, we'll focus on the Cathedral of Salt, too. So don't go away. Please keep listening. I trust you're enjoying the show. Thank you. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 140 with Anthony Patrick LaRose. Find his books on Amazon. At the moment, we're talking to him in Tampa. He is the author of Cathedral of Salt. It's a kind of a murder mystery, criminology, Tom Clancy type book. I've read it. I enjoyed it. But we're going to talk further about this, and you know, just give you a little bit of background about Tony. He's an associate professor of criminology at the University of Tampa, but he's worked all over the United States, Massachusetts, Washington, Oregon. So, you know, we're talking 25 years of experience. So you're talking to someone with, you know, some weighty stories behind him. But anyway, he was inspired here in Colombia, and in particular in Zipaquirá, to write this novel, The Cathedral of Salt. And we're talking about this, and we're talking about the inspiration, we're talking about the characters, we're talking about the research, how real the forensics have been. But one character that's remained with me, and I'd like to know a little bit more about her, and that's you know, she really is kind of, I mean, well, she's obviously very key to the story, but she really is a mystery, and that is Wassa. Tony, you've got to tell us a little bit more about her.
Oh, absolutely, Richard. What she represents with Wassa, obviously, is not only certainly historically that she represents the Muisca and that area. In fact, her name Wassa, you know, comes from the Muisca language. And she's really a female character, and certainly didn't want to do the damsel in distress, uh-huh, or the love-struck woman who, you know, meets the gringo, and you know, they fall in love, and off they go, to Cartagena for their honeymoon. But to make a really strong woman, a really independent woman. And she is really a mix of a lot of the women that I experienced in my life and are, you know, my family, you know, like my mom, my friend Lisa, who's just this really tough attorney, and also my friend Veronica, who's Latina, she's from Puerto Rico, and also very similar, all of them very similar, very strong women, very strong personalities, a very no nonsense, and I wanted her to reflect that in terms of her personality and how she goes about her business and what she does, and so I hope that comes through in the end that. That idea is of her independence and her strength.
Well, she does exude that, you know. She's the indigenous culture, and trying to put it as correctly as possible, the indigenous culture is different to anything you and I know, and that's the real truth of it. And there is a different role, let's say, for the independent women of this nature. And of course, there's movements today, you know, in all of, you know, all over Colombia, not only Colombia, anywhere where there is, let's say, Aboriginal people. It's this sense of belonging and this sense that their land and their you know, their sacred areas have been usurped by, let's say, imperial designs or colonial possession. And, you know, that all comes across in the book. I mean, you really did explore Wassa and her personality and, of course, what makes her who she is.
Well, thank you. Yeah, she's that was, you know, that sort of the image, in terms of her personality is built kind of on, you know, on people that I know, but her physical form, you know, and I see all my characters in my head, but and who she is also based on, although I've spent more time in Mexico than I have in Colombia, but I just remember particularly in Acapulco and some of the indigenous people from that area, and I remember, you know, these women, older ladies, you know, very, maybe 4 foot, you know, 6 inches tall, but boy, they're carrying their baby, and they're carrying these heavy ceramic plates to sell, and they're doing, you know, and I wanted Wassa to embody all of that, you know, the history, the physical strength, also kind of a more modern, for lack of a better term, mental strength of not going to be domesticated, if you will, but someone who is much more into the fight.
Definitely. That comes across in the writing. Believe me, it comes across in the writing. Now I understand that you are writing. Is it a film script for this book? You're putting it together.
I am. I'm in the process now of completing it. I'm most of the way through. I've written a few drafts, and I find the tricky part is, and you know, Richard, I know you're a writer, is when you're editing and you have no choice but to, you know, cut out X amount of words to make it fit. And it's not easy. It's not as easy to do as you might think. Right? I mean, we're writers, right? We write stuff because we think it's good, and we read it and we think, hey, this is really good stuff. And then when it's time to cut it, it's sometimes been a little difficult to do. But I have been editing out and just trying to make sure that the process flows and that everything that's occurring moves the story forward, and to make sure that at the end of the day, while obviously we have to have main characters and supporting cast, that the town and the mine and that area and those people, that they're the real stars.
True. Now, I ask you, because I've never tried to work on a film script or anything. I have worked as researcher, you know, like a creative writer and so on for documentaries and investigations of that nature and you know, to make sure that those are going out there and directing and filming get, you know, the elements in order and so on and so forth. But, you know, for any aspiring film writers, let's say, or script writers out there, filmmakers or script writers, what background do you have, in this? Did you take any training, or is it just off your own back?
I have off my own back. I've got no training in script writing, and even for writing, for writing fiction. All my history has been academic articles, encyclopedia entries, those types of things. But I knew it was something I wanted to do. I'd always had kind of ideas bouncing around my head, and same with the script writing. It's kind of learning on the go.
Yeah.
How to pace things, and there are some guidelines that are kind of standard that can be followed. I think the hardest part is, like you had just mentioned, is you. As the writers, we know what we mean, and yeah, we know what we see in our heads when we put it down. And so now the difficulty is, how do I make sure whether it's a studio head who maybe will read it one day, or a producer or an actor or the director, are they seeing the same thing that I am, in this character or in this setting or in this situation?
This is true. I just imagine that, the sort of tightening up the dialogue and things like that would be really tough, but without losing any of the, the original impact that is on the page in the novel itself. I mean, I would find that, I think, I'm just thinking off the top of my head right now, but I would think I would find that very tricky.
And that is something that I've dealt with quite a bit, because it's the original process was, okay, I'm just going to get the book and I'm going to open the book and I'm just going to write the book as a script, and, off I'll go, and shouldn't be any problem. And then what you find out is, well, if you do that, then your script winds up, 400 pages long, and nobody's going to shoot, no one's going to shoot a 400 page script. And so you say, okay, well, now I've got no choice. I've got to start cutting some things here. And as you just mentioned, dialogue is one of the big ones. Is you really do have to tighten up the dialogue. And one of the things in the book is Sam, the main character Sam, is, he's kind of always a little bit confused. He speaks Spanglish and he's hungover quite a bit of the time. And so he has to repeat himself and he doesn't understand quite a bit. But there's no time for that in a script. So a lot of those kinds of things have to go.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, I've asked this of many, authors, of the many authors, no, but the two or three authors that I've had on Columbia Calling, I've asked this same question, so it's my opportunity to ask it of you. Now, let's say in the perfect world, and it's going to happen, of course, the movie gets picked up, the script gets picked up, some studio wants it, they want to produce it, and so in your mind, who are going to play? Who are the actors that you have in your mind to play the parts? Let's say of Guasa, Agent Grant, and Santos. You must have an idea, because you've got to be, let's say, writing it down with an image. Who are the best suited, let's say, for these roles?
That's a really interesting question. And one of the things that I've had to do is, I know some Colombian cinema and I've seen some Colombian television, is I wasn't obviously not as familiar with Colombian actors as I would be with American actors, who I of course see all the time. And so in terms of the characters, for Glossa, and I don't know, this might be an issue of you know, the character might need to change a little bit. But I thought Selma Hayek would be a perfect
I can see
example.
That. I can see
her.
That.
I think she's got that. She's got both the ferocity and I think the beauty that would really stand out in that character. Sam is a little trickier. I mean, he certainly has to be an American. Well, at least that's the original setting.
Sure.
Could be something that obviously if the studio wants to make the movie, we could have a discussion. So I don't have anybody particularly in mind for that I thought, okay, this guy can be Sam Grant.
Yeah.
But the only person that ever kind of jumped in my head, I thought Matt Damon could be a pretty good Sam Grant.
He'd have to be a bit more grizzled, wouldn't he?
He would have to be. Yeah. He's getting up there. He's getting along.
Okay, perfect.
Well, I'll tell him I said
that. Yeah, no, well, I don't think there's any possibility of me telling him that. But that's funny. I thought it's kind of like my secret weapon question there, you know. And it's, but
well, it's interesting. I have been in contact with a few Colombian producers and directors and actors. And one of the things that I did want to do is I think Santos comes across as the really good guy. I'd like to see maybe one of the actors who does a lot of action movies.
Sure.
To maybe step out of that role and step into this more sort of thoughtful, sensitive, maybe even a little more troubled type of guy, kind of stretch as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that, definitely. Now, let's just give you some nice plugs here then. So the book is Cathedral of Salt. It's available on Amazon. It is a great read. I see there the paperback issue is available for $7.99. And then for Kindle, it's $1.97. So incredibly affordable, both items there. And, you know, there are a whole series of positive reviews. It's not just one or two. There are 14 positive reviews, from I could not put this story down. I could not put this book down. The storyline was entertaining. I enjoyed the suspense. I was happy to have it on my Kindle. I liked the Yankee ingenuity, wrote someone else. Catches your attention from the beginning and keeps you reading. I mean, come on. You know, these are good reviews. These are good reviews. So, you know, go out there, get the book, support the writing industry, support our writers out there, you know, and someone who's clearly enamored with the genre. And now I understand you have another book, but it's not Columbia related, but since we've got you on the show, let's talk about it. The other book is called Juarez. Tell us a little bit about this, because you are really a Mexican expert, aren't you? As we would say, a Mexicanologist.
A Mexicanologist. I hadn't used that term, heard that term before, but yeah, I guess you could certainly say that I am. I did spend 6 months there. I've traveled there quite a bit and done a lot of studying there. But also I was a Fulbright scholar, and I spent 6 months in Mexico, you know, studying Mexican policing and the Mexican criminal justice system. And the book Juarez, though, is set in up and along the frontier, what I would call the border genre. You know, mm-hmm. books that are all about, you know, I guess it would depend on the book, but you know, that interesting dynamic between Mexico and the United States along that border. Mm-hmm. And Juarez focuses on the murders that have been going on there for decades. In fact, a lot of your listeners have probably heard of the women of Juarez.
Yeah.
Literally the thousands of women who have gone missing, who work at the factories around that area. And I know from my research that I know the Americans have stepped in. I think Venezuela has sent a specialist in. So have some European countries. And yet those murders continue. And that's what that book is about. It's a thriller. It's an action adventure book that kind of really focuses on corruption. You know, the corruption that what I refer to when I look at places like Juarez is the perfect storm of corruption. When you have a corrupt industries or you have corrupt police. And this is on both sides, but I think you have similar. We have a corrupt culture that doesn't care about these women, or something would be done at this point.
Yeah, and
if the focus is on that.
It makes me think of the 34 students going missing, but which is a minuscule number alongside all of this horrible. I mean, it truly is. It's just distressing reality in Juarez, and the women, just working in those factories going missing, and I assume much like in Colombia, that the corruption is from the top down and from the bottom up, but I assume that people know who's doing it and when it's being done and how it's being done, but there just seems to be no way of resolving it. And I've not read the book, but I imagine you explore this inherent corruption in similar societies, Colombia and that of Mexico, I think.
And that is a large part of it, these kinds of things that occur, and it's not, if you look around, whether it's Colombia or you talk about Mexico or places, we always notice, it's never the elites.
Yeah.
It's never their children, who suffer. It's never the big-time politicians, right? It's never the very wealthy. It's not the industrialists. It's the poor. It's the disenfranchised. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see that really nothing has gotten done, because for whatever reason, these people don't seem to register with politicians, or don't register with the police, don't register with the culture that would just simply at some point say no more.
Yeah.
And unfortunately that point has not come yet.
This is like you said, it's a kind of an urban underclass that's just easier to overlook.
And these women, and it's sad, but have pretty much become disposable. And this is not just the point of finger at Mexico, because I certainly the U.S. plays a role. It's gotten so bad, and when I was researching it, it has reached such a point that there's actually several criminologists believe it's actually become an attraction for killers and for rapists. From not just Mexico, but from the United States, that, hey, this is the place where they can go and they can operate and do their dastardly deeds, and essentially left in peace.
Yeah.
And that's just absolutely shameful.
I mean, it's just shocking. It's just this known and recognized impunity, isn't it? I mean, that you can go do your thing, however nefarious and just wrong on every level, and know that nothing will come to it. Nothing will come of it. You will not, let's say, be brought in front of a court of law. You will not pay for your crimes. I mean, that's pretty horrific. I mean, that is really bringing home the reality on border cities. Let's say, I mean, Juarez obviously is the number one. But if we think about the people in refugee camps or in displacement camps, as they're often called, especially those maybe in Ecuador or those now in other places, Colombians in other parts, and or wherever. It's just that it's this unpleasant and unreal reality, and so difficult for us to imagine, in truth, because we live in our own comfort zones. But you get this in your book Juarez, and that too is available on Amazon for people to purchase, isn't it?
Absolutely. Juarez, Seeds in the Desert.
Okay, perfect. And now, listen, I understand that you're now working with an agent, so that the hard work is being passed over to someone else. That someone else will be plugging and promoting and trying to get your works further out there.
That's correct. Yeah, I just signed with Leticia Gomez, and I think, I shouldn't say necessarily an irony of it, but, signed a... considering the characters in my book, signed with a Latina agent, and one of just a handful who really focus on this border genre and the idea of Latin American characters, but American characters, commingling, as part of the story or as part of the tale. It works out great. She gets to make the phone calls, she gets to send the emails, and I get to sit at home and I get to write.
You get to write.
I really can't knock that.
That's fantastic. Now, I really like like this term border genre. It's not something I'd heard before, but it encapsulates everything that I could imagine. Especially, I know that Colombia, you know, it's not exactly the border genre, but it's the same. It's got that same instance of the, let's say, the naive Yankee overseas in a Latino culture, especially when we're talking about Cathedral of Salt, you know, the Agent Grant down here. But it's a very good term, that a border genre. So, I mean, will we see your books soon in local bookstores? Will we be able to get them, you know, in hard copy in my, let's say, Barnes & Noble or somewhere like that?
Well, I'm hoping to. That, of course, would be something down the road, you know, that my agent and I would be shooting for. In fact, there is a Spanish version. I don't know if people would prefer to read in Spanish, but there's actually a Spanish version of Cathedral of Salt called Catedral de Sal, also on Amazon. And one of the things that I do like, and you know, using that term border genre, and as you say, right, Colombia is not the border, but that was an important part for the characters, is that it's not just a standard, hey, here's this American, and he's just befuddled by everything, and you know, somebody frames him for a crime, and you know, now he's got to fight to prove his innocence, but to actually immerse the character in the culture, so that someone reading the books, whether it's Juarez or whether it's Juarez spends a lot of time focusing not just on the corruption but the strength of family, which is something that I have lectured quite a bit in Mexico, and something that I brought up is essentially that's the one thing that is holding Mexico together is the strength of family, and in Colombia for the character Grant to really be a part of it, to understand the culture, to understand the language, to understand the food, you know, and the kinds of things that people drink, and the love of soccer, you know, that goes on, as of course Sam doesn't quite get, as most, you know, not all Americans do. But I wanted him at some level, and the other character, the main character's name is Matt, is they have to face their ethnocentrism.
Yeah,
as part of the experience.
It's part of that identity question. But anyway, let me take this moment to thank you, Tony. That's Anthony Patrick LaRose. Find his books on Amazon. That's Cathedral of Salt, Juarez as well, Juarez. And you know, this is a book. Support the writers. Thank you for your time and explaining, the inspiration, and hopefully giving some hope and giving some further inspiration, let's say, to potential or struggling writers out there that it can be done. You know, these are not just pie in the sky dreams. You can write your book even while you have a full-time job. I mean, imagine how much time being associate professor of criminology at a university takes up, but you are doing it. So, you know, again, I say, let's celebrate this. Let's congratulate you for getting it out there. It is a fast-moving book. I enjoyed it, and you can get it cheaply on Amazon. So Tony, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Richard. Thank you.
You're most welcome. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall, episode 140. If you want to get in touch or hear about the show or learn up more about Anthony Patrick LaRose, everything will be on our Facebook page and our website. So Facebook, Columbia Calling, Twitter, Columbia Calling, and our website is columbiacallingradio.com. As always, I love to hear from you out there. And of course, if you've got anyone you think who might be ideal for an interview, please let me know. We're going from strength to strength. We were up to number 11 on the Stitcher charts for international and world and international shows. We're doing well on iTunes as well, so please keep on downloading or subscribe, because then you won't ever miss a show. Thank you again for listening. We're signing off this episode 140 with Anthony Patrick LaRose, the author of Cathedral of Salt. Thank you again.